Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Hour number two, Darren, Donick, and Chase. Brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joint, smoother than smooth. Here on this Monday morning, Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, and Chase McCabe with you. Every day, every Monday at this time, we say hello, and we talk with TD, Teron Davenport, NFL Nation reporter for ESPN. And ESPN.com, he covers the Titans. Also, Talking with TD is his podcast that drops on Wednesdays that you can hear on this station. And also Friday nights during the 6 o'clock hour, Nate and TD, which is former Titans wide receiver Nate Washington. Teron, we had a lot of things to talk about last week with the moves the general manager made, some big cuts in the middle of the week leading up to a big game. And when you think about replacing a long snapper, a punter, and a holder, that could have spelled trouble, but it didn't play out that way on Sundays. I thought those guys did their role. What did you think?
Yeah, I think they did their role. It was a good job of bringing in some guys that have done it before. Ryan Allen actually worked with Steven Goskowski before, so that helped. And they did a good job. Some really good punts by Ryan Allen, that's for sure.
Yeah. I feel like every week now, and I think probably in most NFL markets, they probably have these same discussions on their airwaves because of COVID and injuries, and it's just a different year. But it's just weird to, you know, watch your team that you cover and it's in your market every week and say, who the heck is that? And this week's candidate, Breon Borders. I was like, who the heck is that? He played 100% of the snaps.
Yeah, I mean, he not only played 100% of the snaps, he played well.
Yeah.
He tackled Jimmy Graham one-on-one in the flat. He had pretty solid coverage against Darnell Mooney a few times. I think he did a really good job, and he just stepped up. And that's what they needed out of that cornerback position opposite Malcolm Butler. And I would like to take a moment just to, you know, bring some attention to Malcolm Butler and what he's done. He had a very, very good stretch of games going one-on-one against Chase Claypool, one reception for negative yards, going one-on-one against A.J. Green, two receptions for 5 yards, and then Allen Robinson, 6 for 70. Not all 70 of that was against Butler, but, you know, he played a really good game against a big-time receiver, so you got to shout him out too. But, yeah, Borders played really well. And it, like I said, it's the type of play that they needed from that cornerback position.
Has he been their best corner all year?
Oh, without a doubt. I don't even think there's a conversation to be had about that. He's playing really good football. And obviously there was one, it was against the Texans, where there was a miscommunication and they gave up a long touchdown. But for the most part, he's played really good. And I think it's something that, you know, is great to see, you know, for a guy who struggled initially. And I asked him last week just what was going on and what he is finding, you know, to play so well. And he said he owed it to the city of Nashville and he owed it to his teammates and to the fans. I thought that was really cool that he mentioned that.
What did you think of the newcomer, Desmond Keane, who had to basically, as you said, introduce himself to his teammates Sunday morning before kickoff?
Yeah, I thought that was kind of funny how, you know, you saw him out there introducing himself to guys like Khalif Raymond and a few others. I guess he didn't get to introduce himself to some of the guys on Saturday. Fortunately for him, he had already known some of the guys as well, went to college with Imani Hooker for a year, trained with Malcolm Butler, you know, so that was a good transition for him. I think he did a good job, gave up one play. Anthony Miller was like a 20-something yard reception. But for the most part, his coverage was really good. He was Johnny on the spot for the fumble return. Another guy that you got to shout out, Jeffrey Simmons, for what he did, you know, forced the fumble.
Man.
And then King picked it up and returned it. But I think he really helped out in that secondary, especially covering Anthony Miller for the most part. So it was another thing that was good to see, just a guy come in and play with a lot of energy and be excited about getting a new beginning, and you saw it.
Big Jeff is the real deal. My goodness, he is. I mean, I know he had a rough go at it here. I think it was maybe the Pittsburgh game, but you know, he is by far their biggest disruptor on defense. Something we were having fun with in the last hour that maybe you can lend a little insight into. We were trying to figure out, how did Desmond Keane have a choreographed touchdown dance with his teammates that he hadn't seen until Saturday? He'd just been on Zoom calls. How did they have a touchdown dance when he scored?
Yeah, it seemed like something that just kind of came together really, really fast. And going back and watching it, because you saw some of the guys just kind of jump into the pile and do what they did. It seemed like it, like I said, it was something that they put together on the fly, but it worked out.
Talking to Teron Davenport. Teron, we were just kicking. This is another thing we kicked around. We'd love to get your insight on it. Derrick Henry right now, after leading the league last year with 303 carries, is at 182 halfway through. So he's on pace for a little more of a workload, which you want to think big picture here. And you can tell that they are, because they are working hard to get McNichols and Foreman some carries in there. And one of the examples that I'd like to point out is they're up 24-3. They give up a touchdown. They get the ball back. It's 24-10. And they go with Foreman for two carries, McNichol for a carry, in a deal where I can think back to some games where it would be easy to say, okay, here's our closer. This is where Henry's going to break the big one. And completely end of story. But they felt like they had the game won. They didn't use him, right? So he ends up with 21 carries. They've actually dialed it back a little bit. So what's your thought? And through the midway point, do you feel like he's still got plenty in the tank to have the big finish that we've come to count on the last couple of years?
Yeah, I don't think it's any discussion whether or not he has a lot left, because he has plenty left in the tank. Mike Vrabel touched on it a little bit after the game and saying that you want to be aware of each player's workload, knowing they're going to turn around and go against a Colts defense that is number two in the league, or they're top three. I think they're number two, but regardless, they're in the top of the league in run defense. So it's going to be a physical game. It's one of those primetime games where Derrick Henry tends to rise to the occasion, so I think it was wise to manage his carries in this game and give Foreman and McNichols some carries. I think eventually you're going to see that rushing attack morph into a three-headed monster, but still featuring Derrick Henry. And it's, like I said, it's a wise decision for Mike Vrabel and Arthur Smith and Tony Dews to do what they did, and scaling back carries where it wasn't absolutely necessary for him to carry the football. Like you said, the game was wrapped up, and they just had to run the clock down a little bit, and that's what they did with Foreman.
And you've watched long enough that you can cite examples of teams that did not think as much big picture when they had the horse, right? And they wore out the engine, because it doesn't happen in any particular one game, right? If you look historically, all of a sudden the guy's not the same guy anymore, and you say, well, what happened? Then you look back and you say, well, look at all of the workload here. And now we have, this is where analytics and history can show that if you overwork the guy, it will take its toll at some point. I think it's a good thing that we're looking at this, because he's still going to have the most carries he's ever had. If he stays healthy, he's going to blow by that 303, I think. And remember, he had, in addition to the 303, he had the three playoff games where he was tremendous, but that's more workload. So this is a very important big picture question for them.
Yeah, I mean, and there's a couple guys you could look at, and I don't even think analytics comes into play. Honestly, I don't want to credit analytics for that one. It's just,
it's just common sense, right? But some people had not had some common sense in the past, right, with the Earl Campbells and
a couple of examples. I mean, you look at the Chiefs with Larry Johnson.
Great example.
You know, he had buku carries back-to-back seasons, and then he just gradually, over a two-year period, just fell off the planet. I think another guy that's a really good example is Sean Alexander, who quietly had one of the best seasons ever for a running back, and he had 300 plus carries and you know, set records for touchdowns in a season, and he eventually fell off as well. And coincidentally, Eddie George is another guy that you can mention, not yep. necessarily a sudden fall off, but a gradual one. But coincidentally, Derrick Henry talks to both of these guys almost every day. And I talked to Eddie recently about that, just that managing that workload. And he said it is tough, but you know, you just have to continue to have that mindset of you're not going to be the one getting punished. You're going to do the punishing. And over time, though, that starts to pile up. So I really think that it's something that they have to be wary of and just understand that, you know, you can't use him too much. You know, like the Bill Withers song, you know, use me up. You can't do it too much. You have to, scale it back some when necessary. And they did that yesterday.
Yeah, so keep in mind, 370 carries is the danger zone. And he's on pace for 364 right now. So we'll see how they manage that in the second half. Teron, I want to ask you about the Bears defense. I thought they did a good job. That bread and butter that the Titans have just carved up teams with, that play action, the crossing routes to A.J. Brown and to Corey Davis, they hit just enough of them yesterday. They made the big play down the sideline to Brown. But I thought the Bears had a pretty good feel for how to slow the Titans down. How much of that do you think is just, that's a really good defense? And how much of it do you think is a little concern going forward? The Colts and Ravens obviously both have very good defenses.
Yeah, I think it was just a case of the Bears having a really good defense. They still hit that play for a couple big ones, that play action to A.J. Brown. So it was still there, and Corey Davis had an opportunity also. It kind of got up on him a little bit quicker than he probably thought, and it resulted in an incompletion. But I think that play is going to continue to be there, because the moment – these guys start to, I'm not even going to say the moment. It's just natural for running backs to be able to have that impact. So, you know, linebackers, they're going to naturally cheat up a little bit, right? Take that step, and that's going to open up just the slightest passing lane, and that's how you see these things happening. So it's just almost instinctive for the guys to play it that way and for it to open up. So I don't think there should be a concern there. You also mentioned that the slot fade that, you know, A.J. Brown was able to have against Buster Screen. And I think that's something that is really important. I asked A.J. about that after the game, and he said that he wanted to show it's really important to put it on film that you can take the top off of defenses. And that's exactly what he did. Got behind the nickel. And then as well as the safety, and made that catch and high effort to dive into the end zone with a guy, you know, draped on him. So definitely a great job by A.J. Brown.
How worried are you about the offensive line? I'm not sure if they have any kind of outlook on Saffold, but They're starting to ask a lot when you start digging into the depth chart that low.
Yeah, I never like to rail on a guy, but, you know, Jahmyr Douglas, he leaves a lot to be desired. I'll put it that way. I would not be too comfortable if I was Ryan Tannehill behind Jahmyr Douglas. And, I mean, it just is what it is. Like I said, I don't like to rail on a guy, but, I mean, you have to call a spade a spade. And if Saffold isn't out there, it could definitely be a serious problem going against DeForest Buckner and that Colts defensive line. So they'll definitely have to account for that. I would expect to see quick passes if Douglas is out there because, like I said, you have to account for it. You look at the game, you know, Brent Urban had a really good rush on him and got a pretty solid hit on Tannehill. They stunned it the one time and I believe it was 98, I forget his name, but he was able to get a sack. Now, that wasn't all on Jahmyr Douglas. It was in the exchange, but still, you know, these are things you have to be wary of.
We're talking to Teron Davenport, Titans NFL Nation reporter for ESPN, here on Darren Donick and Chase. So I remember last year on Chase and TD, we talked to, I think it was Chuck Smith, about pass rushing. And Harold Landry specifically, his development. He had the sack yesterday. Clowney's out. You know, Landry was somebody that I identified needed to step up, and I felt like he did. But what have you seen out of his development as a pass rusher?
Yeah, I think this last game he did a good job finishing. And he would have had two sacks, but Foles had the intentional grounding. It just has to continue to happen, right? And you know, as far as the development, I see an inside move starting to come into play for him, but he still just has to continue to do what he's always done, and that show that bend coming off the edge. And it's just a matter of finishing when you had the opportunity. There have been a bit too many times where he was there and he didn't bring the quarterback down. And that goes for pretty much everybody across the front. So it's not just Harold Landry. It's something that collectively they have to get better at. And I'm not exactly sure how you do that, but that is something that they have to find a way to improve.
Do you feel like that even though, you know, the offensive line wasn't great for Chicago, the offense as a whole wasn't great, but three sacks on the day is certainly that confidence build that maybe they've been looking for. And if Clowney is available and can be, you know, be more than he has been, I mean, is this the starting point for the second half of the season where maybe the Titans do have some semblance of a pass rush?
Yeah, you definitely have to hang your hat on that and be confident after that performance, because end of the day, you can only play who's in front of you. So whether that's a third team guard or a center playing tackle, whatever it should be, all you could do is beat the man in front of you. And that's what they did for the most part consistently. And I think it is something that they could build on moving forward. Now, this Colts, the offensive line is they're a good one. I'm actually for Whiteboard Wednesday. I'm going to draw up a couple of things that I think they're going to need to go to just to get that pass rush. But you also have to give them credit for getting pressure on Foles with the safeties. You saw Kevin Byard drop down and then come off of the edge and pressure Foles on a third down. Vaccaro, they sent him a few times. So you're seeing that maybe not get a sack, but it's causing an errant throw that will get the defense off the field on third down. So we know that's an issue that they definitely have to improve upon. So it's not just the sacks. I think collectively they have something to build on after watching what they did yesterday. And, you know, they just have to move forward.
Okay, this may be silly, but, you know, some of the drops yesterday on offense, your guy Sticky Fingers had a couple, which usually doesn't happen. It gets right to him. Do you think some of that does – I know I've heard Tannehill throws it hard. He's obviously been on the team for over a year. They're used to him by now. But is that still a factor sometimes for a receiver and a quarterback getting on the same page?
Well, I mean, the timing is always something that you want to improve upon and have right. The drop that I think of for Ferguson, now he may have had more than this one, but the only one that I remember is it was on 3rd and 6, and he and Corey Davis had kind of a switch release, and he ran an in-breaking route, and Eddie Jackson was kind of on him, and he wasn't able to pull it in for the first down. That was in the first quarter. Was there another one after that?
I don't think so. I think he was only credited for one drop. There was the one, that big play that he had a chance to make, but it was actually a great defensive play. If you take a look, it was broken up. You remember that one, Teron, late, where they threw it deep to him. The guy actually comes in there and makes a great defensive play. That was not a drop.
Right. I called that. It's not a drop. So he just had the one.
So, look, it's going to happen. You know, Corey Davis had one that I mentioned that kind of got up on him, but then, you know, later in the game, Danny Trevathan had a really good play. He poked it out, and it was not possible. Well, not it made it more difficult for Davis to make the catch. So I don't think those drops were necessarily timing, or the one drop by Ferguson and the one by Davis. I don't think it was timing. I think it was just a bang bang play, I guess you could call it. Like I said, the Davis his one got up on him a little faster. It looked like than he had thought, and that tends to, you can usually tell that for like a guy that typically catches the ball with their hands, when it gets on their body, you could tell that it got on him a little bit quicker than normal, because that's why it hits their body. But it's just something. Hey, you know, it's another thing that they could watch and look at and say, hey, I got to do better next time. But I think overall, especially against that defense, I think they did a solid job.
Teron Davenport covers the Titans for ESPN, their NFL Nation reporter. TD, we appreciate it as always. It's a short week, so talking with TD coming up Wednesday. You got a game plan yet?
Yeah, I'm going to have Mike Wells on. We'll continue with the NFL Nation reporter coming on. So that's the game plan. And like always, Elijah and I will talk shop. We'll blow the whistle. I don't know what I'm going to call out this week. Last week it was the officials. We'll see this week. But, yeah, like always, it's going to be a great show.
Awesome. Can't wait to take a listen to that. Teron Davenport, appreciate it as always.
Yeah, for sure, man. You guys take it easy.
When we come back here on Darren Donick and Chase, we'll get more into this Titans game. 6-2 on the year, 615-737-1025. It's ESPN 1025 The Game.
This is what I know coming up in about 20 minutes. Just tell us what you know. We'll give you a prize attached to that, and then we'll head east. We'll head to Knoxville coming up at high noon, and boy, do we have things to talk about with Vince Ferrara, as the Vols have lost 4 in a row, and that second half was an absolutely pathetic performance. Don't forget, ESPN 102.5 The Game and 94.9 is going to be your exclusive home for the 2020 Masters. Yeah, it's this week. And the leaderboard updates we'll have on our show and throughout the day here on 102.5 The Game, starting on Thursday. So Thursday and Friday, and then Saturday and Sunday, 94.9 will be the place to find the Masters live both days. And all that brought to you by Music City Golf Store in Belmead for all your golfing needs. If you'd like to jump in there and react to anything you've heard to this point, our phone lines and text line wide open, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 737-1025. Short week for the Titans. We're going to have a reaction to two games this week, which is fantastic. Monday a little bit different, but we get a reaction today, and we get a reaction on Friday's show. So short week, Indy comes to town, and two of the next three games are against the Colts, with the Ravens sandwiched in between. And dare I say it, at their midway point, this is probably for the division. You win both of these games, you probably just wrapped up the AFC South. You lose both of these games, things just got really, really hairy. So this is an opportunity for them to get a season sweep of Indy and possibly put themselves in the driver's seat to win a division title for the first time in a while.
And then, yeah. You know, it's a very intriguing sequence, too, with the Ravens playing the Colts yesterday and then the Titans turning around and playing the Ravens in between the two division matchups, because there was a certain point yesterday where you're sitting there going, hey, the Colts might have a service break here. They might have a chance because they played so well in the first half, and the only touchdown that the Ravens had was a fumble recovery. And otherwise, the Colts completely shut down the vaunted Ravens offense. And you're like going, where is the Ravens offense? And then in the second half, it was a way, way different story, and the Colts' weaknesses showed up offensively. So that was a little bit of a scare, of because if the Colts win that game, you're thinking, wow, that's a huge upswing for the Colts to be tied in the division going into these two head-to-heads. Now it's a little more what we thought it would be. But, yeah, these three games, wow, really, really defining.
We're going to, the best way to put it, we're going to learn a lot about this team in the next three games, where they stack up.
Might have to play. This is why it's a short week, right? You might have to play at least this first game without Saffold. And I don't know what we're going to learn, but man, as you heard, Teron, they got a lot of mileage out of Sambrio. I'm not sure you can get that kind of mileage out of Douglas. He has struggled.
No.
Every time he's been out there, it has not looked good.
Well, you saw him last year before Nate Davis,
right?
You know, got ready, and Nate Davis became a staple on the line. I mean, it was Jamil Douglas that was the guy, and he was awful.
You're facing some nasty defensive lines here.
Yeah.
Have you guys looked at the line for Thursday night?
I have not.
Okay. All right. Well, let me go to DraftKings and give you the official line right now. Who wants to take the first stab at it?
Okay, well,
go ahead, Wiley.
And this is a home game.
Yes, it is.
I will say Titans by 2.5.
Okay,
Chase.
Good. I'll say Titans by 3.
Titans price by is right. Titans by 1.5.
Wow,
is the current line?
Yeah,
that close.
And that's with the game here.
Yep.
I'll be curious to see how that moves. Because, I mean, you could say that if it closed at a pick'em, I don't know if I'd really be all that surprised.
The Ravens were favored by 2 over Indy this past week. And by the time that game kicked off yesterday, it was Indy favored by 1.
Indy's numbers are actually better than their record, if that makes sense. Like, statistically, they have a lot going for them, especially defensively. So they've made some huge mistakes, right, that have cost them some games. For example, the first game, they lost to the Jaguars. Why? Because they had some bad interceptions. The Browns had a chance to win that game. Tons of mistakes and interceptions that cost them. And then yesterday, 2 huge mistakes that hurt them. Now, the second one, albeit, was that really an interception? I don't think so, right?
Not
that
really.
Was a very generous call at best. That was, in fact, that was a bad call. There's no way you can tell me that ball is intercepted, but that really hurt them. So if they iron out the turnover issues, the Colts are a pretty strong team. But the turnovers are part of it, right? That's maybe the best thing you can say about the Titans. They have another game yesterday where the turnovers go their way.
Jonathan Taylor crushed them. They had all the momentum, and that fumble, which, you know, they're in Baltimore territory. They've crossed the midfield, and they're in Baltimore territory. And that fumble, which ended up being, what, a 65-yard touchdown, which Phillip Rivers, by the way.
Nice try.
Ooh,
it's hard to make a tackle in the NFL when you're on your back.
Well, just he
think?
What did he trip over? The painted line? What did he?
I'm not sure.
The yellow line.
That was football fouls. That was a good football fouls.
And he just sat up and just stared at the camera like, oh boy.
Yeah.
There's another good Phillip Rivers gif because he has a few.
Yep.
He has a few, so there's another one. That line will get you. Gotta watch
but that changed the momentum. I mean, that really, and you thought, okay, well, Indy then swung it back their way when Baltimore had the opportunity to take the lead for the first time. And what happened? Gus Edwards fumbles at the 1 or 2 yard line when they're going in to punch it in, mm-hmm. and Indy recovers it and goes about 20 yards or so. But they couldn't get anything from that. And then once that drive stalled, where Indy got the momentum back, it was basically all Ravens after that.
Yeah, the Ravens got it in gear in the second half. But this is—I'll tell you—I am really intrigued about this matchup. It is going to be fun to analyze and see what happens, especially with the history of this rivalry, all the trouble that the Titans have had with the Colts.
And Philip Rivers.
Yeah. And Philip Rivers, no question. So now you put the two together. You know, these are some nemesis of the past. Now, they exercised the demons a little bit last year with the win in Indy. And they remember the block field goal that they run back for a touchdown? Giant play. But they got it done. It certainly wasn't easy. Boy, a lot on the line. This is going to be huge. Huge. Can't wait.
Huge.
And to know that these two teams are going to turn around and face each other again quickly, it's going to be interesting.
I like that. And I kind of like that.
And the Colts have the Packers in between too. So it's not like they get, you know, a break in the schedule.
Their schedule's brutal.
They have a really rough. So they have Ravens that they come up short. And they've got these two games with the Titans, and that's sandwiched around a Packers team that we know is a tough team. Now, that's at least at home for them, but this is a really tough stretch. And then after the Titans, they go to Houston, which, as we know, I mean, Texans aren't right now. Yeah. They're a train wreck, but they're still – when you have Deshaun Watson and you have J.J. Watt, you still bring something to the table. And then they're at the Raiders, who are an interesting team for sure. And then they go back and play the Texans again. And then go to the Steelers. So this is, as you were saying, Darren, it's a pretty difficult schedule that the Colts have overall. Because we just gave you pretty much the whole second half: two with the Texans, two with the Titans, and a game at the Steelers and a game at the Ravens. Oh, I'm sorry, the Raiders.
Who, oh, by the way, look pretty darn good.
They're not bad when they put their best foot forward. The Raiders are good.
They look like. Tell you what, this playoff race is going to get really interesting.
No doubt.
Oh, it's already fun.
I think everybody has, you know, given the Chiefs that division, but this just in, the Raiders are having a pretty good season. I think they're going to hang around. I don't think the Broncos or Chargers have anything. The Dolphins, all of a sudden, while the Bills, you know, they look like the front runner to win that division, I don't think for a minute you can count out the Dolphins. And you know the Ravens and Steelers are good. You know the Titans and Colts are good. But right now, you've got an opportunity to really separate yourself in the division. If you can find a way to sweep Indy, like I said, I think you are absolutely in the driver's seat to take this division. And I'm not sure, with all that being said, I'm not sure the two teams come out of this division. I think it may just be the division winner.
I think you've got a good thought, because, you know, sweeping the Colts, to me, that's a tall order. You know, a split, that's one thing. You can't get swept. I think that's the first thing. But I think with what you just said, I think it's easy to sit there and go, well, with the extra spot, you feel like a cushion is there, and maybe a kind of a mediocre team will get in there with that seventh spot. But that doesn't look like it's shaping up that way in the AFC, because right now you have 9 teams that are 5-3 or better. And you've got some have-nots at the bottom that you don't feel like are going anywhere. You know, we know the Jags and the Jets are way down there. We just mentioned the Texans, who are somewhat of a tough out. The Chargers, you know, has there ever been a team like that that's a 2-6 that seems to be right there grasping victory every week?
They cannot close. They cannot close. Can't finish.
Then you got Patriots and Bengals, right? The Bengals have the quarterback, but they got a lot of problems. The Patriots have a lot of problems. Let's see what they look like tonight.
Can't wait for that one.
But I wonder, you know,
it's my underdog pick.
With the extra spot, is an 8-8 team get in there? Probably not, right? You got to have at least 9 to get in, probably.
If there was ever a Coach of the Year award for Oh So Close, Anthony Lynn would have won it 3 years in a row.
My gosh.
Oh So Close.
It's bizarre.
Yeah, but Oh So Close is probably going to...
It's going to be good enough to get him fired, yeah, is what it's going to be. It's going to be good enough to show him, get the door shown to him. He's not going to survive. I mean, look, Oh So Close is not going to keep you around. I mean, they've kept him around. Honestly, I think his leash has been pretty long, and it's the same every year. This, yeah, is what they are. And Oh So Close is, I mean, they are right in every single game to the end, but they cannot finish, whether they have the lead or whether they're trying to win it on the final drive. And, you know, like I said, that's good enough to get you fired in this league, and that's just what they are. But I think it's going to be really intriguing the rest of the way to see how this plays out, because I'm not so sure two teams are coming out of the AFC South. So it may be a year, well, you better win the division or you're not getting into the playoffs. That's what it feels like. By the way, did anybody see what Deshaun Watson said after the game? Will Fuller had the big game. He had 100 yards and a touchdown. I think one of them was a 77-yard catch for a touchdown. He said, basically, if they would have traded away Will Fuller, it would have devastated this locker room because of all the stuff that's already happened. He was basically saying, yeah, we would have packed it in. You'd have traded away Will Fuller to the Packers, we would have packed it in and called it a year. He didn't say that, but that's what he was saying.
Right. And I think there's something to be said about that. Real quick.
They wanted a second-round pick, and the Packers weren't willing to go higher than a fourth round, which I don't blame them.
Yeah, I don't.
Second round's too high for him.
Yeah.
He's a fantastic player, but he's got to prove to everybody they can stay healthy. And right now, he hasn't done that. This year, he's been relatively healthy for his standard. Actually, he's been more than relatively healthy for his standards, but, you know, still a long ways to go, still half of a season. But he has spent more time on the shelf than he has on the field, and nobody's given up a second-round pick for that.
Yeah.
He's going to be an expensive contract for somebody, whether it's the Texans or somebody else, which Corey Davis's stock, I guess, dropped yesterday after 0 catches. But it just shows you that guys like that aren't quite as easy to find as it would seem.
Yeah, but that means Corey will probably have a big game Thursday. That seems to be what it is.
You hope.
It's AJ, and then it's Corey, and then it's AJ, and then it's Corey.
But Fuller, I think they turned the fifth-year option down, or this is his fifth year. One way or the other, I think he's a free agent.
I think it's his fifth year.
He's a free agent at the end of the year.
Yeah. Yeah, so he'll be one to watch. Do we think that there is a chance that the Titans and Ravens gets flexed?
Don't know. We'll come back.
What would it take to get flexed? A lot of people are way into, like, why don't you ever text? The Titans never get to play in them.
I mean, yeah, the game scheduled is Chiefs-Raiders, so my guess is they're not going to turn down a chance to go to the new stadium.
No.
Nope.
And no Mr. chance. Mahomes playing? No.
Come back. Tell us what you know. It's very simple. 615-737-1025. That's to close out the second hour of this Monday show. But right now, I want to talk to you about this weekend's major golf tournament that I've been talking about, along with a huge pro and college football slate. And there'll be no shortage of action this week or this weekend. DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook, wants you to be in the center of it all and to celebrate Sunday's action. DraftKings is ensuring all new users that you are covered up to $100. That's right. You bet. They cover you risk-free on all Sunday betting, all of Sunday's action. DraftKings will have a special promotion and odds boost every day of this year's tournament in Augusta, Georgia. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app right now. Use the promo code 1025GAME, and when you sign up, you'll ensure your Sunday bets up to $100. That code again, 1025GAME, during sign-up for a limited time, only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Remember, you must be 21 years of age or older, Tennessee only, risk-free coverage paid out in site credits. Restrictions do apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789.
Some things you just know.
I have to know.
Do you think everybody knows?
When you know, you just know. It's time to set the record straight. Join the fun on This Is What I Know with Darren, Donnick, and Chase.
Open canvas. Just tell us what you know. It's that simple. 615-737-1025. That is our phone line. That's driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. That's how you can get in touch with us. You must participate to win a $25 gift card to Nashville Underground. That's what's at stake, $25 gift card to Nashville Underground. And all you have to do is tell us what you know. Who would like to start?
I can start.
Okay.
All right, go ahead.
Chris Collinsworth said this last night. Could not agree more. This is what I know. We got way too many pass interference penalties being called in the college and pro game. Chris Collinsworth, I think, had these exact words. It's way too easy to draw a pass interference call as a receiver. It just is becoming, especially when you throw it up into the end zone, in the red zone, the jump ball. If you breathe on the guy, they're calling it on the DB. It's almost like you expect, like you hold your breath, 1,001, 1,002. Oh, yes, and there is a flag. I mean, ask yourself when you're watching these games, when your team has a ball, it's close, the flag's coming in. We've dialed it up a little too much. I think we got to dial back a little bit and let the defensive player have a chance in some of these things. And I'm rarely seeing offensive pass interference called. You guys agree or disagree? I feel like the number of pass interference penalties in a lot of these big games I'm watching, too many.
I don't know. I think it's been pretty consistent over the years. I think there's times when you scratch your head and there's times when I think they get it right. I think it's an incredibly difficult.
It's the toughest. It's one of the toughest calls in sports. It's one of the toughest calls in sports, no question.
And I don't know if there's a way to really fix it.
I hesitate to jump on a pile for what is an extremely difficult call. And I just think for years and years and years, as long as we've been watching these games, I just think we will always find games where we go, yikes, I wouldn't have called that, or I would have called that. And I just think it's part of the game. I think it's an incredibly difficult call to make. So I don't know if it's any different this year than any year. That's just me. That's just my two cents.
All right. Is it my turn?
Doesn't matter.
I'm
go
ready.
Or you go.
This is what I know. In 1988, the Lakers, the Dodgers, and Bill Elliott were all champions. In 2020, the Lakers, the Dodgers, and Chase Elliott are all champions. The 24-year-old won the NASCAR Cup Series title yesterday at Phoenix, and I'll admit, I was surprised. I went Group A. I thought Denny Hamlin would get it done, but that was not the case. He led a ton of laps. He won the race. He won the title, and I don't know if you guys saw, but it was a very cool moment as Jimmy Johnson wrapped up his NASCAR career. They let him take a victory lap, and when he completed the Polish victory lap with his window net to the fans, he pulled up alongside Chase Elliott and shook his hand as if he was passing the torch, and then Chase Elliott was able to celebrate. So that was a pretty cool moment. Bill Elliott was there as well. So 24 years old and already a champ.
One of the youngest to ever do it.
Yeah, and Bill Elliott and Chase Elliott joined Lee and Richard Petty and Ned and Dale Jarrett as the only father-son championship drivers in NASCAR.
It was really between Chase Elliott and Joey Logano, in my opinion, on Sunday.
Yep.
That was the two best drivers out there.
Yeah, and I wonder how some things are going to work out because Denny Hamlin in his post-race press conference said, "We got to get better as an organization. We were just missing some speed." Now that he's an owner and has his own team with Michael Jordan, and he's not wrong. He's not wrong, but I think that's one of those things that maybe you do behind the scenes and not in a press conference. But that's
clearly he was upset.
He was, and I get it. I understand.
615-737-1025. 615-737-1025 is how you can get involved and tell us what you know. This is what I know. I was very sad to learn of the passing of Alex Trebek. I mean, almost four decades at a run on a game show. It's pretty impressive. And, man, he was about as steady and as good as it gets, right? I mean, who doesn't like Alex Trebek? I don't even know that. I never got a chance to meet him. Never had the pleasure. But
iconic.
I mean, everybody knows Alex Trebek. I mean, there. I would say in my lifetime, Willie, tell me if you agree or disagree, because we've had this basically the same lifetime. I would say Alex Trebek, Bob Barker, and Pat Sajak are probably the three most iconic game show hosts. Is that fair to say? Did I leave anybody out?
I think you nailed it. I think those three probably are above anybody else.
That's the Mount Rushmore of
game
show hosts.
Who is the third one you said?
Pat Sajak.
Yeah. I'd say so.
I mean, if I was doing a Mount Rushmore of game show hosts.
Who is the guy that was on Family Feud for forever?
He wasn't on there forever.
Richard Dawson started it. Steve Harvey is pretty associated with it now, and there was a guy in between. But I mean, the guys that Darren mentioned were there
decades. Yeah.
Never left.
Richard Dawson wasn't that, and he wouldn't last probably a week in today's
climate. No.
But I was very, very sad about that. So seemed like an incredible human being. I mean, I just see everything, all the specials.
Universally liked. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was just featured as a part of the NHL draft doing the, he did the Ottawa Senators draft pick. Guys, remember? I mean, that was just a month or so ago.
He's from Ontario.
Yeah. So I know he's had a long battle with cancer. So.
Yeah, pancreatic cancer that he lost. So he's what, 80?
He was 80.
80? Yeah.
Yep. So
he'll be missed, man. It's a heck of a run, almost four decades on a game show.
I thought something that was cool, Brooks Bratton from the Nashville Predators, he sends out an email every day about just different articles, and at the bottom he always puts a song of the day, and he tweeted this too. The song of the day today was the Jeopardy theme. So a nice little tribute there to Alex Trebek.
Yep. One other, this is what I know. I've already been bringing this up, but it just got worse. This is what I know. Things are starting to get really hairy and really uncomfortable in Ann Arbor. This Jim Harbaugh thing is going to be fun to see how this is going to play out. I told you guys last week his contract is up in 2021, 3 days after the end of the season. There's been absolutely no talks of a future. I don't think there's going to be talks of future. What was the stat after Saturday? First time Indiana had beat them in how many? I mean, what was it, like 50 years or something? Ridiculous.
I think it was 87.
First time Indiana beat Michigan in 87 years?
No, 1987.
Oh, so 1987.
33.
Okay, 33 years. I thought it was like 40, 50 years, but either way, long, long time. Michigan's not very good, and Jim Harbaugh makes $8 million a year. Yeah, by the way, Michigan State, the team that they lost to at home, went to Iowa and lost 49-7.
Yeah, both Michigan teams are on my list for –
And how good
reasons.
Is Indiana? Indiana, you got to
say, is good.
Is way better than they've been. So the question is, how good?
They're pretty darn good. So things are getting really uncomfortable up in Ann Arbor, and I'll be curious to see how that plays out. Let's go to Adam, who's first up on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Adam, what do you know?
So I was watching Florida and Georgia this past week, and I see Georgia jump up. I pull up Chase's Twitter feed and I start to tweet him, and I was going to curse at him for picking Florida. And then Florida starts turning it around, and I'm like, okay, I'll just wait and see what happens here. So this is what I know. Trust Chase McKay, man. He knows what the hell he's talking about. And as when that game finished out, you know, I had nothing but praise for that guy. So from now on, Friday at 1 o'clock, I'm going to be using Chase, you know, and I'm going to ride that until it goes away.
Elijah, send that to our bosses, please. Thanks.
Appreciate it. Did a good job, man. I'm proud of it. So, yeah, we'll see you on Friday for sure, buddy.
Thanks, Adam.
That's a promo right there.
That's a great promo. I approve this message.
So you've given a winner. I've given a winner. Willie, what was your record on giving? I forgot. No?
Crickets. That's what it was.
Nothing.
Over.
You're talking about it. I went 5 for 6 in the pick six.
Oh. Okay.
That's 5-1. You're talking about.
That's not what I asked. Yeah. But hey, thanks for updating your points this week.
5-1 in the pick six.
Yeah. Okay. You had a good week.
Good.
I never got a chance to give my winner, by the way. You guys just took that all the way to the house. I was ready with my pick. I'm glad I didn't give it, though.
Yeah, I want us to do that. I want us to actually plan and do that on Fridays, where now that, you know, we're giving advice and we're talking sports betting, let's all give our locks. I'm 0-for. Mine was terrible. So,
what was yours? Michigan State?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that your gift? I told you to actually give a gift.
Listen, I don't want to start this trend, but that was very much on par with gifts to the people.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, no, it was. And you worded it the same. So
I'm glad I didn't say.
It's feeling the same.
I'm glad I didn't say book it. So,
One last call before we head to Knoxville. Tim is on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. What do you know?
Hello, gentlemen. This is what I know. Hugh Freeze and his burner phone will be headed to Ann Arbor, and he will be the next coach of the Michigan Wolverines.
I love the call. Thank you. Let's discuss quickly, because if anybody didn't see, Liberty just beat Virginia Tech. Okay. At Virginia Tech on Saturday. They were like a 17-point underdog. Boy, that would have been nice on Thursday to hit. And Liberty won the game. I think they kicked a 51-yard field goal to win it. They're now 7-0. It is going to be a race for Hugh Freeze. The question is, who will have the stomach to actually pull the trigger and do it? Because I'm just telling
gut feeling
you,
is
Hugh
it won't
Freeze
be Michigan.
Is going to get hired.
My gut feeling is it won't be Michigan, but we'll see if it comes to that. What Virginia Tech, how is Virginia Tech that big of a favorite? I don't see them as what they have been in the past. Why were they a 17-point dog to an undefeated team in a program that has some momentum?
I told Darren Saturday morning, I'm like, I'm all over Liberty. It was underdog Saturday for one. I really like the dogs, but Liberty's a good team. He's got that thing clicking now.
Well, yeah. Also think about this. Lynchburg, Virginia is where Liberty is located, which is not far from Blacksburg.
Mm-hmm.
So that one really stings if you're a Hokie fan. Like, we just lost to Liberty? What the? Did you see how it happened? They had missed the field goal, but they had called timeout to try to, quote, freeze the kicker. Did you guys hear Rick Neuheisel say, you can't freeze the freeze? And then, of course, the guy hits it on the next one.
Yeah, well, I'll say this. I'm sure, and we'll ask Vince, I wonder if there are people in Knoxville going, well, you know, could get Hugh Freeze in here. I'm just saying.
Philip Fulmer's made
they
his
made,
bed.
Yeah, yeah.
He's made his bed with Jeremy Pruitt.
His guy.
Look, we said it on the show from jump. The minute that news got out, it's not now dumb. That they've lost 4 in a row. We question, what are you doing right now? Like, there's nobody out there trying to steal Jeremy Pruitt away. Like, what? He's got 2 more years left. What are you doing re-upping him and extending his contract? Like, let it breathe a little bit. Haven't you been in the business of paying off coaches for years to go away? Like, let it breathe a little.
Well, when this is said and done, they're going to be in the business of doing it again.
Well, we'll see.
It was the most questionable one I've seen since Todd Turner extended Woody Woodenhofer in the same thing where everybody's going, what? Why? Huh?
Darren,
like, Woody Woodenhofer got an extension. And as we know, if you look at his record, you're kind of like, when did he get an extension? Why?
Beds can be made, but they can be unmade too.
Well, aren't you tired of that if you're a Tennessee?
Oh,
how much money have they shelled out? How many coaches
trust
are they
me.
Still paying?
We have a lot to get into with that, so I look forward to it.
All right, let's start the third hour by heading to Knoxville and bringing in Vince Ferrara from WNML. That is next.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids, some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.